And we're holding on page Ayin in Nedarim, the last paragraph labeled Daf Samach Vav Amud Aleph, so the middle of Ois Mem Dalin.
Ayin Amud Aleph, you said?
Page Ayin Amud Aleph, the paragraph was labeled Daf Samach Vav Amud Aleph. It's the last paragraph on that page.
I'm sorry, Ayin Daf Vav, I didn't follow.
Page Ayin, it's labeled Daf paragraph itself is labeled Daf Samach Vav.
Thank you.
So continuing on the topic of Hataras Nedarim and the grounds on which you can be Matir Neder. So the Mishnah says Koinam she'ani noses tloinis k'ura. Suppose that a man says a koinam, which is one of the lashonis of a neder, that I'm not going to marry tloinis, the ugly one. And it turns out she's not ugly, she's beautiful. Shchora, he says, I won't marry you. The dark-skinned girl, Varei Levana, and it turns out that she's fair-skinned. Ktsara, the short one, Varei Aruka, and it turns out that she's tall. In all those cases, Mutarba, he is in fact allowed to have Hana from her, and he is in fact allowed to, if he marries her, he's not also. The neder is not Chal. Loi Mipneshi, Ka'ur of Anasis, Na, Shchora of Anasis, Levana, Ktsara of Anasis, Aruka, not because the actual circumstances changed, not that she was ugly and then became beautiful, etc. Elisha, neder Tos, but the reason is because the neder to begin with is based on a mistake. He mistakenly thought, he was reported, that she was ugly or dark-skinned or what have you. So now when it turns out that not, then that's fine. So that's because earlier, because you would think that it's nolad. You would think that maybe after all, he made a neder. In fact, the Ran talks about in connection with, you have an earlier Mishnah that talks about, for example, that he says, that he says, I'm not going to marry her, but he makes a neder not to marry her because her father is a bad guy. So now, if her father dies or does tshuva, then he's able to marry her. So now, over here, if a taka was that she was ugly and became beautiful, that would be a problem of noilad. We talked about before that you can't be matter, according to most of the chachamim, you can't be matter and neder on the basis of noilad, on the basis of something completely unexpected. So now, for him to do tshuva, for him to die, is expectable enough, so therefore that's not noilad, but that a girl who was ugly should become beautiful, or was short and should become tall, or whatever, would be noilad, but the point is, here, so only because here it was a mistaken premise in the first place, then therefore it's mutter. Actually, the Ran points out two things. That's one. That's one. There was that consideration, what you would expect or not. The other point the Ran says is because here he didn't. If he had said, for example, that I'm making a neder, I'm not going to marry her because she's ugly, then we can talk about, well, what happens if she's not ugly anymore? But here, in other words, the chiddush of the Mishnah is because he's saying ploinus the ugly one, meaning he's using it as a descriptive term. Well, then when it turns out that in fact she's not that, then it turns out that it was a neder betos. So the Mishnah continues. There was a story of a man who made a neder not to have Hana from his niece. We find in the Gemara, it was actually in today's Daf HaYomi, that it is a good thing where possible for a man to marry his niece. Mephoshim talk in various places. Reasons why, the basic idea being she's your closest blood relative whom you're allowed to marry up Yalacha. B'chla, Mephoshim talk about, you know, when it comes to the Arayas, really, you would think, logically, maybe you should be allowed them. I mean, after all, you're going to have, for example, a brother and sister. They have a connection between them to begin with. Maybe it should be better for them to marry the same way with other close relatives. And, of course, we know the Torah says not. And you have Alpi Nigla, there are various reasons for it. And Alpi Chsidus, there are more reasons for it. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, there is a certain inyan that when a couple is biologically related, and then they're going to get married, then it brings a certain closeness between them that you wouldn't have in a regular couple. So therefore, so it's considered a good thing for a man to marry his niece where it's an appropriate shidduch. So, but Pashtus, what happened over here was somebody had probably read him a shidduch with his niece, and he refuses because she's ugly. So they brought her to Rabbi Shmuel's house, the Yipuha, and they made her beautiful. They gave her nice clothing and jewelry. The Mefarish and the Ritzvah explained, as the Gemara is going to mention, she had a false tooth, and Rabbi Shmuel replaced it with a nicer one. And basically, they took care of her. Amalei Rabbi Shmuel, then Rabbi Shmuel calls in the boy and says, "Bnei Mizuna Darta, did you make a neder not to have hana from this girl?" Amalei Lav. So he says no, because in other words, the whole reason for his neder was because she was ugly and unkempt looking.
Is this his relative, his niece, or
his niece? We're saying Basa Hoise, yeah. So v'itira, Rashi mentions in at least one place where it mentions this point about a man marrying Basa Hoise, Rashi makes the point. The same thing would be also for a brother's daughter. But a sister, usually a sister, your sister is more likely to read the shidduch. She wants her daughter married off, and therefore she's more likely to tell you, her brother, "Would you like to marry my daughter?" But the same thing would apply to a brother's daughter as well. There are other Mephoshim who point out there are certain milas in a sister's daughter over a brother's daughter, among others, so if you marry her, then it means that you have he being the brother of the Kala's mother, then it means therefore she's already going to have a certain affinity to him that she doesn't if she's his brother's daughter. Anyway, the point is that in this case, Rabbi Shmuel made her beautiful, and then he says, so now you obviously didn't make the neder not to have anah from her, Rabbi Shmuel, and so Rabbi Shmuel was matter the neder. Some of the Mephoshim explain that that means that Rabbi Shmuel disagrees with this concept that you can't be matir based on noilad, because on the face of it, this is a case of noilad. Other Mephoshim say that no. I mean, you know, the fact that she was hungry, she couldn't afford decent food or clothing, and so on and so forth. So that somebody should take care of her is not noilad. It's something that's reasonably expectable.
What is noilad? I don't understand.
Basic meaning of noilad is something that's newly born, like something completely out of left field. Something that could not reasonably have been expected at the time that the neder was made. To give you an example here, we're going to learn about this in Nazir in a few days, Be'ez Hashem. For example, the Mishnah tells over there that there were people who had made a neder of Nizirus, and then they came to bring their Kavanas and finish their Nizirus, and they found that this Mikvah had been destroyed. That's an example of Noilad. They would never have expected, on the face of it, they would never have expected the Beis Mikdash is going to be destroyed during the time of their Nezirus.
So
the Mishnah mentions over there that Nocham Amadi was Matzah their Neder, but the Chachamim disagreed and said you can't really do that. That's not a valid basis to be Matzah and Neder.
How long is Nezirus? For 30 days?
30 days usually, yeah. So, okay. Anyway. But here it may have been for longer. But yeah, anyway, the point is that you have this concept that you can't usually be Matzah and Neder based on Noilad. So again, one possibility is that Rabbi Shmuel disagrees with that, and the other possibility is that here it's not considered noilad. So the Gemara is going to point out that actually that Rabbi Shmuel holds that even if she was ugly and became beautiful, etc., that it is a valid reason to be makir the neder. With that said, the other possibility is maybe it's not noilad in the first place because it's something that can be reasonably expected. Anyway, Ba'osa Shah Bachar Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel, looking back on this story, was crying about what had happened. Va'omar, he says, B'nois Yisrael Noisein, Jewish women are intrinsically beautiful. El Sha'anius Menavaltan, it's just that poverty makes them disfigured, makes them look ugly. Like this girl, in other words, she has a natural beauty to her. Elamai, all the years, she had been hungry, and we find in the Gemara, for example, that starvation can make a person's face, can make a person's skin darken and change color. Therefore, Mestama, also other things about her were also not the way it should be, but now all you need is you put in a little money, and it turns out that she really has the natural beauty that she had all along. When Rabbi Shmuel passed away, and this wasn't the only girl that he had done this kind of thing for. In general, he had done this kind of chesed for many Jewish girls. So the Jewish women, particularly, were mourning for him and saying a kina about him. And they were saying, "B'nos Yisrael al Rabbi Shmuel b'chena." Jewish women cry about the death of Rabbi Shmuel. And they used, they were basing themselves on a Lashon HaPasuk, V'cheinu Omer B'shol, B'nois Yisrael al Shol B'chena. After Shol was killed in battle, so David says a whole kina about him and Yonason, and he mentions over there, he says there, the Pasuk, Jewish women cry regarding Shol, so the same way now, 1,000 years later, they repurpose that same expression to use about Rabbi Shmuel. So first, you want to ask Maisa Lister. So what do we have? A story in the Mishnah that contradicts what we said before. Usually, when a Mishnah brings a story, it's to strengthen. It's to bring a practical example of a din that was said earlier. Here, we just said that if he says I'm not going to marry her because she's ugly, and then later on it turns out that she's beautiful, then he can't be matir neder on that basis. Only if he said I'm not going to marry her, the ugly girl, then we can say fine. Like the Ran said, that's a descriptor, not a condition, and therefore it turns turns out that she wasn't ugly after all, and therefore fine. But here then, the story with Rabbi Shmuel contradicts that, because she actually was ugly. The answer is Chsuri Machzer. The Mishnah is missing words. V'hochi Katani, it means to say like this. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Rabbi Shmuel disagrees with what the Tanakhama had said. Afilu Ka'ura Manassas Na, even if she was actually ugly, and now she became pretty. Shchora Manassas Levana, she was dark, and now she became fair-skinned. Ksara Manassas Arucha, short, and she became tall. And then it still works because Rabbi Shmuel, either again because Rabbi Shmuel holds that you could use Nolad to be Matar and Neder, or because maybe that kind of thing is not considered Nolad because it's reasonable enough. It happens often enough that people's appearance can be changed for the better. And then the mission to prove that point is bringing the story involving this guy making the Neder not to have Hanah from his niece. The Nisula based Rabbi Shmuel via Pur B'chula, and they brought her into the house of Rabbi Shmuel and beautified her, etc. So part of what they did for her. Now the Mishnah just says in general via Pur that Rabbi Shmuel and his family made her beautiful. So the Gemara adds a detail. Tana, we learn in Braisa, Shein Toteves Hoysala. She had a false tooth. I guess the pastures, either a tooth of hers at some point had fallen out or broken or whatever. You know, they didn't have dental care then like you did now. And, you know, even if they had dental care, maybe she didn't have insurance. So she had a false tooth, which didn't look so good. But also, Rabbi Shmuel changed her zahav mishaloi. Rabbi Shmuel personally paid for a gold tooth to replace it instead, to also make her look beautiful. Now, a lot of the mefoshim deal with the question that based on a Gemara, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that talks about false teeth, about whether you're allowed to wear them outside on Shabbos. Now, nowadays, false teeth are fixed in place. You can't remove them unless it's like a bridge or something. But back then, apparently, they had some times where they would be removable. The question is then, can you wear such a thing outside on Shabbos? Is there, we know there's a whole perek in Shabbos that deals with the details of certain kinds of jewelry and ornaments and accessories and whatnot that you're not allowed to wear outside on Shabbos, midrabbanan, because you might take it off, a woman might take it off to show it to her friends, and then she may end up carrying it on Shabbos. So it talks about over there, about a gold versus a silver tooth. Now, the Gemara mentions over there that when it's a gold tooth, then it would be a problem, but a silver tooth would be fine. Now, there's two explanations. What's the difference? One is because a gold tooth is much more expensive. Gold is more valuable than silver, after all, so it's much more likely that she may take it out to show off to her friends, as opposed to a silver one is less likely. The other explanation is because a gold tooth, it stands out. It doesn't really match the other teeth. Therefore, she's more likely to be embarrassed by it and take it out and carry it home rather than every time she smiles or opens her mouth, people are going to notice the gold tooth. Well, according to that second possibility, then why is Rabbi Shmuel making her a gold tooth? Wouldn't it be better if he made her a silver one? So Marsha, in fact, says that our Gemara over here, Taka, seems to be a proof for the first explanation, that you have two explanations that Rashi brings over there. So it seems from this Gemara that the first explanation, Rashi's explanation, is the better one, because that would explain why Rabbi Shmuel is not concerned that the gold tooth is going to make her look bad. Adrabah, it's going to make her look as good as possible, so much so that she might even take it out and show it off to her friends. Other Mephoshim point out various possibilities. It might be that it really was, it might be that it, the Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, for example, it might really have been silver, which fine, matches the other teeth better. It means it was as expensive as he put as much effort and workmanship into it as if it was made out of gold. Another possibility that he mentions, and the Shalmei Nedarim also mentions, is that maybe her other teeth were yellow as well, so therefore a gold tooth is going to match them better. Whatever the case, he put in all this effort. And when Rabbi Shmuel passed away, a professional safdan, we find in Shas, they would have professionals by Levias who would give a speech over there. They would say they would start like with a poetic expression or whatever.
Professional what?
A professional safdan, Meloshin Hesped. They would start out with some kind of poem or something like that to arouse people's emotions to cry. So he began, like we said in the Mishnah, B'nois Yisrael, Al Rabbi Shmuel B'chena, Hamal Bishchen V'chola, and he continued with the Loshon HaPosuk that David says about Shaul, that he gave you beautiful clothing to wear. So here, Rabbi Shmuel had done that for this girl and for other Jewish girls in this situation as well, and given them fine clothing and other things like that. Maharsha points out that also the expression in the pasuk is that David says about Shaul, "Hamal bishchem shoni," that he gave you scarlet, like telas shoni, garments to wear. Well, shoni is also the same shodesh as the word shein, a tooth. So therefore, the Saftan over here was playing on words over here that Shaul, back in his day, gave scarlet, beautiful, beautiful scarlet dyed clothing to the Jewish women. Rabbi Shmuel gave a shame, gave a tooth, Malosh and Shani, to this girl. So the Gemara goes on to tell a few other stories involving issues of shalom bias between husband and wife. Here in Ein Yaakov, it doesn't bring all of them, but it brings a couple of them. One of them is Ahuda Amalal Dvesu. A man says to his wife, Koinam Shi'iat Nanasli, a Koinam, again a Loshen of a Neder, that you're not going to be able to have any Hana from me, Achetat Imi Tafshilech to Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Shimon. Unless you give some of your food to eat to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Meaning, in other words, I guess he didn't like his wife's cooking. So he's telling her, basically, you know, you have to go to those two great chachamim and give them of your food. And if they're willing to eat it, then fine, I'm willing to stay married to you and otherwise not. So Rabbi Yehuda toined. So Rabbi Yehuda ate from the food. Omar, and he figures, okay, it's a bizoyan to a Talmud Chacham to do that way, but after all, he figures, Kavachomer, Umma lasa sholem in ishla ishta amatorda, madach to make peace between husband and wife by a soita. The Torah says, Shmi shenichta b'kedusha. Hashem says, my name, which was written in Kedusha, Yimocha alamayim ha'ma'orim. It's going to be erased. It's going to be dissolved into the soita water, besofik. And the whole thing is only a suffik, whether she's going to survive the whole ordeal. And it's b'chal a suffik, whether she even did anything wrong. V'aniya, lachas kama v'kamas. How much more so that I should set aside my kavod and taste from this woman's cooking, even if it's not the kavod dik for a Talmud Chacham. On the other hand, Reb Shimon lo toim. Reb Shimon did not want to eat from it. Omar, he has a very sharp expression. Yomusu kol bnei almana, let all the sons of the almana die, val yozu Shimon mimakoyma, and Shimon should not move from his place. Meaning, in other words, basically he's saying, so on one level, in other words, what he's saying, the Ran explains, he's cursing this husband for behaving this way. Let him die, let even all his children die, but I, Shimon, I'm not going to move from my place, in other words, because you don't want the oid, and furthermore, you don't want people to get used to making careless nedarim like that, and it's a bizoyan to a Talmud Chacham, and therefore the Shimon figured that it's not the right thing. We can't give in to this guy, because then he's just going to learn to do this kind of thing again and be mevaza to
Chachamim. To careless nedarim?
So what? To be careless. To be careless with nedarim. Now, there's a number of, Marsha points out that actually we find elsewhere where the Gemara's tractate says that a person makes careless nedarim, a person is not careful with nedarim, then his children, Rahman al-Aslan, will die. So therefore, so he's doing this. Not only is he making a frivolous neder like this, but he's making it on top of it. He's compounding it by including bizoyan to Tamid Chachamim with it. So therefore, sort of Shimon is saying that he and his children should die like other people who are careless with nedarim, and he himself should die for acting this way and leave his wife in almana. There are many other different explanations. First of all, the Rosh says he's not really so much cursing, he's saying more of a fact. This guy, Taka, deserves to die for acting this way. Well, what's going to happen? His children, then, are going to grow up without a father, and b'derech klal, children who grow up without a father, they don't have anybody to teach them the right way to act, so they end up being uncivilized people, and therefore they end up not living very long. So, in other words, it's not so much that he's cursing the children, according to the Rosh, he's cursing the father for behaving, the husband, for behaving in this chutzpahdik way, and then he's saying the result of it is that if he keeps acting this way, and he ends up dying, then his children also are going to Derech HaTeva are not going to have a very long and happy life either. There's a lot of other points in it, including Mephoshim talk about that Ben Yehoyada points out, as a practical matter, Reb Shimon may have been one of those people. We know there are people who are machmir not to eat food outside of their own house because they can't trust the kashrus of others. So Reb Shimon may have held that this is a situation like that. You can't necessarily go and eat from this woman's food. What if there's a shayla on the kalim or something? But still, sharp expression. He actually says, Ben Yehoyada says that the Bnei Almana over here, he actually is referring by that to the Goyim. He explains that the Jewish people are not called an Almana, and we are in the Pasuk Hoysak Almana, but nevertheless, we're only Ke Almana, we're not an actual Almana, because the Eibishter is always with us, as opposed to the Goyim, who depend on their Sorim or whatever they can take to be called an Almana. So he's using this expression over here to say a curse on the Goyim, but in other words, the point is I'm still not giving in over here. On the other hand, Ion Yaakov actually learns the other way around. He says that the Jewish people in Golos can be called Bnei Almana, so he's saying even Ad Kedekach. But another point, actually, that some of the Pefoshim point out, Ben Yehoyada mentions this, Shaman Adorim also mentions this, is that B'chlal, does it mean that, when he says that you have to give the food to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, we have in a number of places in Shas Machloikas, whether a Vav in a Posit, for example, you have, Omaket Ovi V'imoy Mois Yomas. It obviously doesn't mean that he has to hit both his father and his mother to be Chai Misa, it's one or the other. So is it that a Vav in such cases generally means or is it that generally it means and, then you have to, and you need other Psukim to tell you whether it means and or. So Rabbi Shimon will have held, so now Rabbi Yehuda will have held that it requires both of them, therefore he's going to do his part. Mashemkin, Rabbi Shimon takes the view, listen, we don't have to say that the Vav over here in his neder means and, it can mean or. So once Rabbi Yehuda tasted from it, then I'm off the hook anyhow, and therefore, you could say maybe I should be machmer and taste from it just to be on the safe side in case the Vav does mean and. He says, to that extent, I don't have to do that.
Different person, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Another case, the Gemara says, Ahudu Amalala Devesu, a man says to his wife, Koinam Shi'iat Nenesliyan of Koinam, a Loshan of Neder, that you're not going to be able to have Hana from me, Achitari Mum Yofish Abich, Little Bishmal Brab Yosi, unless you show the mum yofa in you to Rabbi Shmuel Rab Yosi. So the Ran and the other Mephoshim over here explain that the word mum over here doesn't mean a defect, but a physical defect. Rather, on the contrary, it means something. Like the word ma'uma in Lashon Kodesh, you find a couple of places in Tanakh where the word ma'uma is written mum. So mum yofa shabich would mean, is there anything nice about you? Is there anything beautiful and appropriate about you that you can show Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi? In other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, she was ugly in every possible way. So now he's saying, so apparently, you know, how he got married to her in the first place doesn't say, but whatever the case, now he's thinking about it. You know, I don't want to have any further hanah from you unless you can find at least one good quality about you to show Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi. Marshall explains differently. The word mum can mean over here an actual mum. Yes, I know you're full of mumming, but can you at least find one mum about yourself that there's some degree of beauty in it? So what you have over here on the side is not Rashi, it's the Ran for the most part. Yeah. He says faket shum dava yofa. So he's understanding the word mum to be like the word ma'uma. Mum yofa, anything beautiful. Maosho is saying the other way around. It means of your mumim, what is the best one? What's the best feature among those mumim that you can show to Bishmal Brabia? So either way, in other words, the husband is being a jerk and saying, in other words, there's nothing beautiful about you and until you can find something, then you can't have any hana from me. So people went to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi to have him help her. Amalahem, so he starts querying them about Taka, what does she look like? Amalahem, he says, Shema Roshana, is her head nicely shaped? Amalahem, Sagalgal, they said, no, it's round like a bowl, so it doesn't look nice at all. Shema Sairana, is her hair nice? They tell him no, Dermala Anitse Pishtan, her hair is like bundles of flax. It's tangled, it's uncombed. Now, why in that case, why she couldn't just untangle it and comb it nicely, basically, but that's how the story goes. Shema Ineha Noi, so Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi continues, maybe her eyes look nice? No, Trutis, Hane. They're Trutis. The Ran and the other Mephoshim, the Ran explains, and the Ran and the Rosh explain that Trutis means round. Rashi, the Mephodesh printed over here under Rashi's name, gives a different explanation, Rakos, that her eyes are tender and soft. There's other places in Shas also where Trutos, when it comes to eyes, seems to mean long and skinny. Whatever the case, they're not shaped like normal eyes. Shema Ozneha Nois, are her ears nice? They tell her no, Kfulis Hen, her ears are oversized. Kfulis literally means doubled, her ears like twice the normal size. Shema Choytmana, is her nose nice? No, Bolum Hu, it's swollen shut. Like she's got a big nose, and therefore like the nostrils are like swollen shut. Poor woman. Yeah, really, she would probably use some plastic surgery. Anyway, Shema Sifseh her nose. Maybe her lips are nice. No, they tell her always her lips are thick. Shema Tzavora Naha, is her neck nice? No, Shakua or Shakutu, it's short. So it makes it look like her head is directly on her shoulders and there's no neck. Shema Kresana, is her stomach nice? They tell him no, Tzavahu, her stomach is swollen. So it's a Vikingish. Shema Ragleha Nois, are her feet nice? They tell him no, Rechobis Kishal Abas, her feet are wide like a duck's foot. But Marsha points out some of these things are actual, considered actual mumim when it comes to a kohen. And in fact, you have the Mishnah in Ksubas tells us that if her husband discovers before the nisurin that his wife has these has any of these mumim, some of them are grounds for being mevatel the kedushin and saying it was mekach tos. Here, apparently, the guy didn't discover it after the nisurin, so therefore he doesn't have that out. But now he's going to try this out with being madur hana. Anyway, some of them, Marisha says, are not actual objective mumim, but nevertheless, people consider them mumim. Anyway, Shema Shmona, okay, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi says, does she at least have a nice name? They tell him, no, Lachluchis Shema, her name is Lachluchis, which means stained. Amalahan, he says, ah, Yofa Koronosa Lachluchis. Well, then she has, it's a, she's very well-named Lachluchis. Shema Lachluchis for mumim, because she's stained and filthy with mumim. So therefore, so according to the Ran and the other Mephoshim, that to begin with, the husband was demanding that she show something good about her to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Well, there's the something good. There's the something good. Her name perfectly suits her. According to Marsha, that the vote is that she, among all your mumim, which one is the most attractive? Well, there you go. Also, her name is the best thing. It's an ugly name, but when you consider that this name perfectly fits her, then it's actually a very good thing. Vishaya, so he was matter her to her husband. So what happened after that? The story doesn't record, but the point is that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi made every effort to try and make her mutter to her husband. One of the Mefarshim, I think it's Ben Yehoyada, points out also that there was also Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is saying with that also, listen, you know, he says to him, you should have considered when you first were Makadisher and you found out that her name is Lachluchis, that should have motivated, maybe you didn't see her at the time before the Kiddushin, that should have motivated you to ask, why does she have such a strange name? And then you would have found out that she has all these mumim. So basically, he's telling him, you were already forewarned. So therefore, now you have no basis for saying that you didn't know, and therefore you should have any grounds for a lack of shalom bias with her, because you should have realized to begin with that this is a clue to what she is. The Gemara tells another case. Hahu bar Bavel the solit to Eretz Yisrael. There was a Yid from Bavel who moved to Eretz Yisrael. Why it's important, why this detail is important, we'll talk about as we go through the story. Nosiv Itza, and there he got married. Omala, one day he tells her, Omala bashirili tren tloifchen or talfi. One day he tells her, cook for me two tloifchen or talfi. There's different girsois over here. The Mefarish, printed under Rashi's name in the Gemara, has the girsa talfi, which means the hooves of an animal, you know, like you have pcha. So he asks her to cook him a couple of that. And then in that case, Bashilin, the Bashilas by Chain Talfi, and she cooked for him too. According to that Girsa, he asked her for these hooves, and instead she cooked him tloifchi, which are lentils. So it sounds very similar. Talfi, tloifchi, by us, Ashkenazim, we pronounce a ches like that. It's very noticeable, but, you know, Sfardim pronounce a back in the throat, so it's very easy for it to be elided. So she thought, when he said talfi, to tlafi, whatever, she thought he said tlafi, which means lentils. So that's the Mephorish's explanation. The Ram's explanation is rather that he asked her, he used the word train, which literally means two, but he didn't literally mean two lentils. He used the word two, like we use in English, a couple. But she took him at his word and actually cooked for him two lentils. Rota halos, so he got angry at her. Lamacha amala bashiri li griva. The next day he says to her, cook for me a griva. Now, a griva also is one of those words that can have a double meaning. The basic meaning of a griva is a saw. But it can, a saw, the measurement, a saw. But it can also mean a large amount. So the Mefarish actually explains what it meant was that he figured, you know what, yesterday she misunderstood. When I said two, I meant a couple, and she figured literally two. So now, instead, I'll tell her a lot, and she'll realize that at least she should make enough for an actual meal. Bashilas griba, but then she literally went and cooked a saw, so an enormous amount of food, and therefore a lot of it is going to go to waste. Then Yehoyada points out in this one, he didn't get angry, because at least the night before, he went hungry. She only made him two lentils, he had next to nothing to eat. Now at least he had what to eat. Fine, the fact that food is wasted, fine, that at least he could control it. He could control his temper. What was going on over here in the first place? So the Ran says that she was a shoita, that she didn't understand these things, and therefore just when he said two, then she thought he meant literally two, and when he said a griva, she thought he meant literally a griva saw. Marsha says another explanation is that's the point why we're mentioning that he came from Bavel and moved to Eretz Yisrael. In Bavel and in Eretz Yisrael, they spoke different dialects of Aramaic. So there's a failure to communicate here, Pashut. He used the expression train tloifchi or train talfi or whatever, because that's what he was used to saying in his native Babel. But she, being an Eretz Yisraelic girl, she didn't understand that kind of talk, and therefore she thought he meant literally two, or he meant lentils instead of hooves, etc., etc. Ion Yaakov says another point. He says the guy comes from Babel and he married an Eretz Yisraelic girl, means he's marrying up instead of down. Now the Gemara tells socially. Now the Gemara tells us, in Ksubas that you're better off marrying below your level rather than above. Chus dargo nasiv itza, the expression in the Gemara. Go down a level socially and marry a wife. He didn't do that. He married up beyond his level. So now, therefore, she holds herself to be higher than him. So when he starts telling her, make for me this food or that food, then she's deliberately trying to just deliberately misunderstanding him in order to mess things up. In order basically so that pretty soon he'll give up trying to tell her what to do, and then she doesn't have to follow his instructions. So, you know, and you have, in English they call that kind of thing malicious compliance. Like, yeah, I'm going to follow your instructions literally to the letter, even though everybody knows that that's not what you actually meant.
Just split it up.
So what would happen after that? She's not worried about that yet. Okay, so several different explanations of what was going on between them. Anyway, Omala, then he tells her, I see the train butsinin. One time he asks her to bring him two butsinin. Now here also it's a failure to communicate, because the word butsin has two different meanings. In Babli Aramaic, it means squashes or pumpkins or some vegetable like that. In Eretz Yisrael Aramaic, butsin means lamps or candles. Yeah, for example, the Loshen, the title they give to Tzadikim, Butsina Kadisha, for example, the holy lamp. So now he tells her to bring him two butsinim, again, meaning with his Babli Aramaic, to mean two squashes. I see it's like Tren Shagin, she brought him two candles, because in Eretz Yisrael, the Aramaic, that's what it means. Omallah, he tells her, what do I need these for? Tava Yosin al Bava. Go break them on the Bava. Now here also there's a misunderstanding what the word Bava means. In Aramaic, in Babli Aramaic, the word Bava means the gate. So he meant go break it on top of the gate. But in Eretz Yisrael, the Aramaic, they weren't familiar with that word. If they're going to use a word, the door, the bava in Aramaic means the door, but in Eretz Yisrael, the Aramaic, it means they would use a different word for it. They would call it delas or dosha or something like that. So therefore, she again misunderstood whether, again, like the Ran says, because she was a shoita, like Marsha says, because it was a failure, there was a language barrier, or whether, like Ion Yaakov says, because she's deliberately trying to cause trouble. Anyway,
she didn't bring those things for eventually to cook, to make food.
Yeah, to make food, and she instead brought them to.
She can't cook.
No, but maybe she thought she needs candles for something else. I don't know. Anyway, Hava Yosef Bava ben Buta al Bava. At that time, Bava ben Buta, the great Talmud Chacham, who we find in other places in Shas, he was one of the Chachamim in the times, he was one of the great Chachamim in the times of Hillel and Shammai, was sitting by the gate for Kadoyin Dina, and he was judging a Din Torah. Tavras Yosef al Reshe, she did, well, her husband had told her to take the two candles and break them over the Bava. So she thought that Bava means Bava ben Buta. So she went and broke the candles over his head. Omala, so he asks him, Mahadein de Abdus, what are you doing that for? Omrale, she tells him, Kachzivani Baili, this is what my husband told me. Bava ben Buta put two and two together and realized what happened. Omala, he tells her, At Asis Ritzain Baili, you know what? You did what your husband wanted. Now, maybe it's not a derech eretz thing to do for a Talmud Chacham, but you thought you're doing the right thing. Hamokam yotzi mimech shnei bonim to Bava ben Buta. So the Eivishtha should cause that two children of the caliber of Bava ben Buta should come from you. In the schos that you're thinking that you're an ishak ksheda sha'oisa ritzoin baila, basically. The Ran says this and a couple of the other stories that are in the Gemara over here, the one that we had over here was Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, and a different one that the Gemara says involving Rabbi Gamliel, and a number of them are meant to tell us the Hasidus of Bava ben Buta and the other Tanoim that we're talking about over here, how far they would go out of their way to make shalom between husband and wife. There are similar stories like that in other places. There's a famous story in a Medrash, for example, of a guy who's Madur Hanah, his wife Hanah, because she came home late from a mayor's shir, and he tells her you can't come back into the house unless you spit in her mayor's face, and he pretends like he has an eye disease and she has to spit in his eye, b'chola, b'chola. So you have examples like that. Ion Yaakov taking the view, again, that that it wasn't that she misunderstood. It wasn't that she was a shoyter or that there was a language barrier, but rather Ian Yaakov is saying she was doing this deliberately to provoke her husband. Bava ben Bota is pretending that he doesn't realize that. He doesn't realize that she's davka doing this as malicious compliance. So he tells her, you know what, you did Ritzon Beilich. In other words, from now on, realize to do Ritzon Beilich the right way rather than, so he's hinting to her, from now on, do Ritzon Beilich the right way rather than this malicious compliance way that you're doing it. And then with the schus of that, you'll have two children of the caliber of mine. Bava ben Bota, by the way, we find in a story, we find that the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that Hurdus had killed many of the Chachamim because he thought that they were going to rebel against him, and he left Bava ben Bota alive and blinded him. It was actually an interesting thing, and then afterwards Bava ben Bota advised him to renovate the Beis HaMikdash. It's actually an interesting thing over here. Which of these stories happened first? Ben Yehoyada says that actually this story happened before that one. When the two candles were broken over his head, Bava ben Bota, part of the reason why he gave her a bracha is because he realized this is a simon min hashamayim, that something involving light is going to be broken by him soon. And that was Hashem like giving him a forewarning of the fact that soon Hurdus is going to put out his eyes. On the other hand, Chassam Sofer learns the other way around, that this happened after the story in Bava Basra. He had told Hurdus to renovate the Beis HaMikdash, which the Gemara says he had good reason for it. He was telling Hurdus it'll be a kapara for the fact that you killed the Chachamim. Nevertheless, Chassam Sofer learns it caused a certain weakening of Torah Va'avoida by the Jewish people, and for that, therefore, he got afterwards two candles broken over his head as a slight onus for that. Incidentally, this that was saying that Bava ben Bota was blind, it's brought, I think, in Seder Adurtis, that we know Rav Sheshis, the Amorda, was also blind, and Seder Adurtis brings, I think, from Sefer Gugulim, that Rav Sheshis was a Gilgul of Bava ben Bota, and we see it in the fact that the name Sheshis is Bava in Atmash. You take the Beis of Bava, and it transforms into the Shin of Sheshis, the first, second letter, and second to last letter, and the Aleph transforms into a Tuf, so therefore Bava becomes Sheshis.
He lived after him.
Rav Sheshis lived a couple hundred years later, but the Seder Adurtis, I think it is, brings up that Rav Sheshis was a Gilgul of Bava ben Bota. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. Gimel Adar Aleph. The Rambam ends the Hilchos Melachim. Those of us who are learning Shlosh HaProkim of Rambam just learned this a couple of days ago, that in Yamin Melech Mebeis David, a king from Beis David arises, who learns Torah and does mitzvahs like his ancestor David, like Torah, according to Torah, Shabbat and Shabbat Peh, and convinces all the Jewish people to follow it and strengthen its weak points, and Yochem Mohammed Hashem, then Bechezkas Shu Mashiach. So now, in other words, so we have the Rambam really is going in this Sefer Halachas. He's really the only source in Halacha that goes clearly into the sugya of Melech HaMashiach, as far as how to identify Mashiach. There's no other Rishon who disagrees with the Rambam. We have as many things about Hilchos HaMashiach, where you have Rishonim who disagree with the Rambam. None of them wrote a systematic sefer about it the way the Rambam did, but at least you have when it comes to detail of Hilchos Korbanos, the Tumah V'Tahara. You have the Raivad, and you have other Rishonim who argue with the Rambam on various details. But here, when it comes to how to identify Mashiach, the Rambam is the only one addressing this point. So therefore, we're talking about it's a very clear, unequivocal halacha. When you find a Yid who does exactly what the Rambam is describing over here, then he's Bechezkas Mashiach. And we have to believe, and we have to look forward, that he is in fact going to finish the job and give Nebes and Mephish, and so forth.
Yesterday's tribe
was
really sharp. The first
Akdama, yeah. Yeah, the Rabbit doesn't pull his punches with the Rambam, yeah. With the Rambam, it's actually brought that the Rambam in turn said about the Rabbit, he said that Miyomai Lenitzchani al Baal Malocha Echad. It's brought. I don't think it's found in any of the extant kisvei Rambam, but it's brought that the Rambam said on him that there's no one who ever beat me in an argument in halacha, only one Baal Malocha, and by that he meant the Rabbit. Okay. Continuing with Dinim of Erev Chatzeres. So we talked about the idea. We talked about how you do it. You gather the bread from all the neighbors, etc. Now we talked about you have to be mezakeh it through somebody to all the neighbors. So again, you, the balabas, are going to be making the eruv on behalf of everybody in your building or the house next door to you with which you share a common area such as a driveway or what have you. So we said you have to be mezakeh the bread through somebody else to all of them. That somebody else has to tackle be. Somebody else as in not a member of your household. So it can't be you. You can't use your son or daughter who are below bar bas mitzvah for this purpose, even if they're not somuch al shulchanah. Even if they get their food and their parnosa from elsewhere. Nevertheless, they're your children and yodim ki yoda in halacha. But you can use somebody else's cotton because here we're talking about something d'rabbanan, and for that a cotton can be mezaka to others. Midaraisa, you can't, which is why we always have the thing every year about giving your dalad minim to a cotton. But when it comes to things d'rabbanan, a cotton can be zoicha on behalf of others. If possible, you shouldn't have your wife be the one be zoicha, because after all, you're responsible for supporting her, and also not even your older sons or daughters, if they're samul hashulchanei, so they're above bar bas mitzvah, but they're still dependent on you for their support. So now yesh oimrim that they're also nechshav kiyadei. Where you don't have anybody else available, then you can use them. If your child has gotten married or anybody else who's not a member of your immediate household who's some hashulchanai, then the chola alma, then everybody agrees that you can be mezaka through them, because then they have an independent yad of their own, and then therefore they can be zoicha on behalf of the rest of the neighbors in the food for the Erev Chatzeres.
What was the problem if the
problem is you have to be mezaka through somebody else. And if it's your young child, or if it's even an older child, but there's some, and some say, even if it's your older child, and some of Hashrachani, it's not a separate entity, their yad is your yad. And the same way as you yourself can't be mezakeh for everybody else because it belongs to you. You have to give it to somebody else who has their own independent reshus in order to be zoicha on behalf of the neighbors. So that's why that results in these halachas over here, which are based on halachas in Bava Metzia and in Bava Basra and halachas in Choshen Mishpat about who can be zoicha on behalf of who has an independent yad and who doesn't.
You don't support them.
So if it's little children, then regardless, if it's your own little children, you can't regardless. If it's your own older children, if there's some hashulchanai, better you shouldn't, although b'dieved you could, and the same thing with your wife. If it's young children of somebody else, they're not some hashulchanai. They're your neighbors from across the street or whatever, then you can be mezaka through them because they're not part of your household. Yeah.
You're not supporting them.
You're not supporting them, right?
Right. Thank you.